I could have just one wish, maybe for an hour, I'd want to be a woman and feel that phantom power. Maybe I'd want to stick around for a while until my heart got broke. Maybe then I could find out if I'm a half-decent man or if I'm just a joke. If I could be the first woman president, I'd take on air pollution. I'd walk the streets of Baghdad at dawn to find a real solution. I'd bear my soul for the people to read. I'd make my secrets known. I'd probably be assassinated first day in office or die somewhere alone. It's no excuse to be deaf, dumb, and blind. When evolution is a thing of no use, it likes to call itself intelligent design.
Insurgent Radio Network calling. Insurgent Radio Network calling. This is Insurgent Radio Network, and this is Terrible Tommy, Tom Metzger, right here in the bunker in north central Indiana in the heartland. We're at P.O. Box 401, Warsaw, Indiana, 46581. That's where you send your snail mail. That's where you send your donations for our various projects and the radio show that we produce 6 days a week, a one-hour show at least, and that's where you get the hot news on the racial thing and get it checked out and get it interpreted from at least my point of view, and that's the only view I'm really qualified to give, right? And it is the 4th of December 2013, Saturn's Day. Righto, and we're off and running. We still got plenty of snow. It's not going away because the temperatures are running, you know, some places around here sub-zero. Supposed to get down in Chicago, I think, to about 10 below tonight. How about that? But it's a beautiful day. We have full sunshine, no clouds in the sky, and it's beautiful. Winter Wonderland, as Hugo Winterhalter used to say. It's a Winter Wonderland. I hope you enjoy my Rodney Crowell music there. I like Rodney Crowell and James McMurtry. Those are two of my favorites. So you're liable to hear quite a bit of their music on here. That one there was quite an interesting song. Quite an interesting song. Said quite a bit, too, didn't it? Well, in the wee hours of the night, I hear them arguing about this Obama healthcare deal, and that gives them something to make themselves relevant. The Republicrats and the Democrazies go back and forth and back and forth, and if I had a couple of wishes, one of them would be to eliminate all political parties, or at least the two major parties. They should go away because they force people into brackets of belief and theory and so forth, to where if you don't follow the party line, you're not the patriotic American. Yeah, I mean, it's ridiculous. I mean, here in this area, it's a Republican stronghold. I mean, really. And these people will tolerate a Democrat, but as long as he doesn't get too telling too much of the truth in public. But they don't want to give a Democrat and the, say, pro-environmental views and things like that. And even though they mumble against the war, they technically pretty much support the war, or at least say, I can't do anything about it, man. They took my son over there, and he's fighting to save America. He got both legs blown off, both arms blown off, but he's a good, a wounded warrior. I see him advertising on TV every day. I get sick of that because it just shows you how the multinational corporations and arms manufacturers and bankers and the whole bunch in the ruling class get us into this stuff, because they want into it to make money. They want money and power. That's it. And when these poor, deluded young people come back all busted up and blown up, and their families split up, and there's a never-ending set of problems that come along with people going off to occupation, not war, occupation. And then they get on television and cry and moan for us to cough up more money to try to make that right. Now, that is obscene. I see these guys, these wounded warriors, in these ads. It's sort of like the SPCA for the animals. I mean, you know, I got to admit it, I get more teary-eyed over the poor little animals they show on those ads than I do on wounded warriors. I'm going to tell you, know, I try to do that on here, tell you the truth as I see it. I didn't ask these people to go over there to occupy another man's country or another woman's country. I didn't promote it. I didn't march for it. I didn't vote for it. And so I don't feel any responsibility for it. And in fact, I do everything I can to talk against it all the time. And so when they put these poor guys in front of me on TV with their legs off, and they tell how wonderful it is now they've got these modern implements that they build right here in my area. People are getting rich building fake legs, fake knees, fake asses, fake everything, and a good share of it goes for the wounded military people. So we got a corporation here, Zimmer's Corporation. They're making plenty of money. They're not crying because of the occupation, because if the occupation ends, they got to fall back on civilian knee replacements and stuff like that, to which they get about five times more than they should. Because I've said before, you can fly over to Europe and go to Belgium or Holland or one of those places and get a knee replaced or a hip replaced for about one third or less, including your plane ticket. So these guys here right in my backyard are making a lot of money. And then there's another outfit that makes these parts for the body, and that's DePew. They're all making big money. And they're all on the front lines of the Republican Party crying for more military war budget. More. We've got, 7,000 military bases in this country? Well, I think that's more condensation of military bases than the Romans had. Definitely. That's right. Well, I see up in Washington State, Boeing just pulled a cute deal and screwed the workers, and the workers went along with it because they're so petrified they're going to lose what they got or lose their house or, you know, lose their job, all that kind of stuff, that they'll do anything. You know, people get they get into these pretty nice big homes because Seattle's very expensive to live in. And they got big-ass mortgages and big-ass payments on flashy cars and big-ass payments on this and that and big-ass payments on sending kids to college and all that. And so Boeing says if your union don't knuckle under, we're putting it up for bids in other states. And these other states will perform fellatio on us to get us to move our plant there. There's one question I was asking along those lines. Think of the cost that goes into moving a giant airplane manufacturing company clear across the country. You'd think that that money could be just well spent by paying their workers more. But the union was, I guess they passed it by 51%, which is not a big great big deal. So anyhow, the Boeing, the capitalists got their way again, and I think that's pretty much the end of the union business. I think with the crushing of the union in this Boeing thing, I think it's just about the end of the union thing, and now it's going to be serfdom all the way until there's sometime a French Revolution solution. Yeah. That's the way I see it. And I see that, on the Obama thing, they're really crawling all over Obama, and a lot of the things is not his fault. Now, I'm obviously on record not to be for having a black president. But considering the way the presidents have been for the last 40, 50 years, I have no use for any of them. None of them. So, and it's interesting when one of these presidents does do something decent, they climb all over him. You know, it's just, you're no good, you're horrible, blah, blah, blah. Well, anyhow, now they found some nuns, and that's another problem. We got a big problem with religion. Religion has way too much control, and every time they do anything that they think might be slowing down their business end of religion, they cry like a scalded duck. So on this Obamacare, they said that these people were going to need to pay for birth control medicine and things like that. And my God, the Republicans went crazy. And so they found themselves a little group, just a small group of nuns and, you know, the little order of the what's-a-ma-call or something like that, that say, we ain't got to do that because that's against our religion. Well, it's not against their religion, because all they're asking them to do is sign a paper, a waiver to get out of it. But this bunch of Catholic nuns are saying, no, signing the paper is against our religion. So, but the Republicans and the Fox TV are all blowing it up like the government's going to wipe out this little group of nuns. And of course, that's the reason why they chose this little group of nuns anyhow, because why didn't they choose some of the big Catholic outfits, you know? And I don't like Sotomayor any more than you do, but on this particular issue, she just passed it on to a higher court. And all those nuns have to do is just sign the paper that they are opting out of the birth control option in this Obamacare. But you see how they build this up into a nationwide thing? They'll probably have thousands of Catholics start marching in the streets about it. It's crazy, man, crazy. Remember, the two main problems that we face, the biggest problems anybody in the world faces, is religion and capitalist predator exploitation. That's it. If those two could be brought under control or limited, the world would be a much different place. But look over there in the Middle East. You not only got, you'd think, well, it's all Islamic. They should be getting along fine. But no, they've got it divided down between the Sunnis and the other ones, and they're killing each other like mad for their religion. And the Christians would do it too. It's just not popular right at the moment. So anyhow, I would defang the religious business real fast. I wouldn't suppress their ability to pray to their mythical god and meet like that. But when they've got multi-million dollar churches and own real estate all over the place, that's not needed. And none of them follow the practices and what their mythical Jesus told them. They don't do any of that stuff. Yeah, it's ridiculous. I'm going to play you a little clip from that miniseries, Carlos, just to whet your.
Was there anyone before? I don't think I will ever do it again. But you and I were revolutionaries. You pass it on to the revolutionary press. However, I'm sure it will end up in the Western media. I hope you'll profit from it, because it's worth a lot there.
I don't do this for money.
Yes, you do.
But it's all right.
You need to feed your family. Don't think for money, too. I will do others.
You don't trust me, huh?
Of course I trust you. You're an artist. You're a great poet, I respect you.
It's not the only reason, I guess. Your notoriety is very precious to these men you deal with in the Middle East. It has been a while you haven't had a headline. And without newspapers, you don't exist.
You're brave. You speak of your mind. That's good, I appreciate that.
Thank you. Can I turn it on again?
Yeah, go ahead.
Are you afraid of death?
I love life. That's why I love living it to the full, because for me, as for every soldier, there's no tomorrow. I can die in a minute. There's only one thing I'm sure of. I'm going to be killed one day.
How do you define yourself? Believer? A Marxist? A libertarian?
I follow only one religion. And that is Marxism. First of all, because it's a family thing. It's a question of heredity. It ran in my parents' blood. Then I traveled to the USSR and formed my own idea of it. I learned dialectics, which is something that every revolutionary should do.
But this revolutionary idealism, dates from the 60s, yeah? Do you find it still relevant today?
For me, there's no longer any difference between superpowers, whether they are capitalist or communist. They're superpowers, and that's it. For me, the only struggle that matters is the oppressed against the imperialists. That's the only one.
Well, Carlos prefers the word oppressed, whereas I prefer the word workers, because there is lumpkin proletariat that no matter what you do are still going to be where they're at and not capable of lifting themselves out of it. I think certain racial groups are oppressed by nature itself. And if there were no capitalists or even religion around, I believe they would be in bad shape. I don't think that relieving the populations of this exploitation would necessarily relieve everybody, because I think that is a panacea. Because when I see videos of the teeming streets of India and Pakistan and places like that, you just have to almost throw up your hands and say, what the hell? Now, we do know that there is exploitation in those countries, and there are super rich living in those countries. Like India is actually, along with the United States, has the most silver in the world. Now, I don't know whether they played out their minds over there in India or what, or who got the money, but the United States has tremendous silver deposits and has had it, and then so did India. But I don't see much evidence of any kind of decent living there, especially in the cities. Well, the Jews and their buddies are getting excited about this one. Whether it's feigned excitement or not, I don't know. But the salute that seems to be becoming very popular in Europe, which some say is a neo-fascist, neo-Nazi salute, and it's growing like mad. But the thing that bothers me is I see a lot of WOGs using that symbolism. So I sent a message out, and you'll get it. TT says, pardon me for being skeptic and suspicious. Also, I'm a contrarian. Being anti-Jew is only part of the problem. It appears that the Europeans and Britons are warming up to much to the Islamic invasion, as I see lots of non-white invaders of Europe using this same symbol. Make one thing clear, I support the aspirations of the Mideast people in the Mideast and the expulsion of occupation forces. However, there is no respect given the white lands of Europe, Britain, U.S., Australia, New Zealand, and so forth. All Islamics on white soil are enemies, pure and simple, as far as I'm concerned. We didn't invite them. The State Department did. These are war criminals in the State Department. They're involved in blowing the shit out of these people's country, and then they're involved in bringing them over here. And don't tell me that's all an accidental situation. The only cooperation that can be afforded is to fight for the expulsion from the Middle East of capitalist corporate occupation forces, but at the same time, self-deportation or forced of non-white Islamics back to the Middle East, from wherever they're at in white countries. Those whites that would side with anyone just because they're anti-Jew or Zionist do a disservice to the race struggle. And I see that quite a bit in some of these so-called right-wing radio shows. I don't know whether they call themselves right-wing or what. They confuse me, because they don't want to talk about the niggers, but they want to talk about the poor Palestinians. And they like to cozy up to the Islamics and some of those pseudo-intellectuals and so forth. And so they can't be trusted racially. They're white guys running radio shows that cannot be trusted racially because they want to get in bed with people who we don't want them or their bed in this country. So I'm going to sit back and watch this growing, I don't know, European-type salute and see where it goes. I see non-whites using it. I scratch my head and say, wait a minute, wait a minute. And then there's the right-wingers in Europe now that are cozying back up to the Jews in opposition to Islamic. So we don't have a common front here. We need a solid front for white Europeans, white Americans, white Australians, white New Zealands, wherever they're at. And it's up to us to eventually drive these people back into their own areas of the world. Here's something that I didn't proofread before I sent it out, and that has to do with some shootings down in Phoenix that somebody sent to me. Started out the prior day, the day before, a guy was shot and killed by the Phoenix police as he was leaving a bank that he had just robbed. He'd been in prison for threatening to kill Obama. He had served in the Army. Like most former military, he had a front consciousness that doesn't work well on the streets, so after he had engaged the Phoenix uniformed cop, he failed to immediately look to his rear, do a 180 in combat handgunnery lingo, and see the undercover detective coming up to shoot him in the back. The undercover detective shot him in the back and killed him. The next day, two Negroes working together took a Phoenix police officer's gun away and shot him with his own gun, and then shot a Maricopa County Sheriff posse member too. So who was better on the streets against the Phoenix police officer? He goes on to say, what I think is needed is more Marats of the French Revolution calling for the death of American law enforcement. America's Christians are not Christians, but humanists. By the end of next year, over 5 million people, mostly old workers, will be feeling the true effects of the humanist, tough love version of Christianity as their federal unemployment benefits run out. They're trying to get an emergency one for 3 months through right now. They're trying a nonpartisan deal that Obama says he'll sign it. But that's only 3 months. It is impossible for there to be super wealth without government's police powers, which is why rich whites support the police no matter what. Without the government's police powers, rich whites would soon find out that they only have as much wealth as far as they can throw a rock. 2013 saw the least number of law enforcement killed in the line of duty in over 60 years. Will 2014 see a sudden and complete reversal of the trend as older persons with no means of support turn violent on younger cops? Inquiring minds would like to know. Let's see here, I made a comment on this at the end. I said, TT says, also notice how the Jew-thinking left actually support the system, calling for strict gun control and suppression of our public speech. These are pseudo-leftists, not fit to use the term left. The only time they support revolution is for more culture distortion. Yeah. Let's see here. Well, here's another email we've got this morning, almost like one of the others. TT, whites need to understand that police are not their friends, but are the political street soldiers of the ruling regime. The French Revolution started off by the storming of a military fortress prison and killing of all the government employees found therein, which included the cooks. The Egyptian Muslim Brotherhood stupidly and foolishly acted like most American white racists would act in that they thought the police were their friends instead of bitter enemies. As they now languish in prison, they can mediate or meditate on the error of their ways. American white racists need to get it through their thick heads. American police are the front-line street soldiers of the enemy, and prisons do to individuals what concentration camps do to groups, destroys them. I agree. Cops are for cops. They can be racist as hell, but only among the cops. We want our ability and freedom to beat the hell out of black street people and all that kind of stuff, but don't you touch them. Here we go again, more spying, more snooping, like other widely used internet communication services. Microsoft-owned Skype has been swept up in the surveillance controversy, unleashed in the mid-2013 by former NSA contractor Hero Edward Snowden. Leaked slides from the U.S. National Security Agency reportedly have revealed that Skype has installed a backdoor that enables monitoring by government of Skype video and audio calls. And officials in Luxembourg, where Skype is based, are said to be investigating whether Skype has shared information on its Luxembourgian users with NSA. Well, there you go. Well, you know what I said. I put on there, you can't order weapons of mass destruction anymore through my Skype connection. No, that's not feasible anymore, so we're going to have to revert to carrier pigeons pretty soon as the only real trusted form of long-distance communication. Well, Polygon Francais, French JDL, Jewish Defense League members arrested for beating up neo-Nazis. Six members of the French Jewish Defense League, the Ligue Defense Juive, LDJ, were arrested after allegedly beating up neo-Nazis. The group reportedly, tracked down neo-Nazis from photos on the internet showing them making Nazi salutes at the anti-Semitic demonstrations. I wish they'd just call it anti-Jew demonstrations. Well, could be anti-Semitic, too, because they got too many North Africans in France, yeah. The six were arrested over suspected connection to a string of attacks in eastern France. Two of them were charged. The LDJ denies involvement in the attacks. According to the claims, at least two of the attacks last weekend occurred in Lyon and Villeurbanne and targeted locals who had made a modified Nazi salute known as the Quenelle. Isn't that the name of that nigger that started it? Do whites have to go to a nigger to get a new way of saluting? The gesture consists of a lowered straight arm salute with the other arm folded across the shoulder. The gesture has gained popularity among French anti-Semites, many of whom photographed themselves making the modified Nazi salute in front of Jewish establishments. And let's see here, what else? Holocaust memorial sites, and even with unsuspecting Jewish passerbys. In a recent attack, French newspaper La Parisienne alleged that roughly 40 members of the LDJ arrived at a London hotel to attack a worker suspected of being a neo-Nazi. Took 40 of them to attack one guy? Boy, that's about right. After an altercation broke out with the hotel security, police showed up and promptly fired tear gas at the members. Nevertheless, the paper claims JDL members managed to hit and kidnap another person, not their original target. Wow. Meanwhile, on Sunday, the French paper reports six members attacked a man they identified from neo-Nazi pictures on the internet, locking him in the trunk of their car. Whoa. The sender of this information says if these neo-Nazis were lone wolves, these Jews would not have had a target to attack. No, and they would probably find themselves smarting profusely because we love to take on the JDL. It's been a while because I don't know how many of them are around. I don't think hardly any of them are around anymore in this country. Maybe in the big city like New York. I don't know. That's another trouble, going around using salutes. You don't need salutes. Your skin is your uniform. And you should be, most of the time, dressed in regular apparel of the working class, or even a little higher than that, maybe. You might have a suit or something like that, carry a briefcase. But it would give you the upper hand if someone's trying to sneak up on you to make them sort of limp away. Yeah, nothing's more fun to me than watch a Jewish Defense League member crawling away, especially after the Jewish Defense member attacks someone, and then they turn around and beat the crap out of him. Good old days when we could have our little tiffs with Irv Rubin, of the intergalactical head of the American JDL. However, there is some controversy there because he tried to kill the head of the JDO, the Jewish Defense Organization, Mordecai Levy. Oh, I told you that story, so I won't do it again. But I want to hear the stories about you boys there in France sneaking up on them. Come on. Can't let a few pencil-neck kikes throw you down in the street without, you know, one of yours goes down, 10 of theirs go down. It's the way it works. Well, how about a little tribute to the passing of Kalashnikov, the father of the AK-47. It was designed by an intuitive machinist who had no formal training in engineering or gun design at all. It was built with few moving parts that were so sloppy that it barely hung together. But it was the friend of every soldier who held it. Legend has it that when the first M16 rifles were issued to troops in Vietnam, that U.S. GIs would throw them away in favor of a 20-year-old AK-47 captured from the Viet Cong. Mikhail Kalashnikov died the other day at age 94. He never regretted the rifle he designed. Well, he shouldn't. Well, you see, that's because that M16 was not designed for combat. It was designed for security service at Air Force bases. And not heavy-duty stuff. And then, of course, McNamara came along, an idiot, and made it the standard rifle for the whole military, which probably got a tremendous amount of GIs killed trying to use that M16. I remember guys back in the 60s and 70s where I lived, they're right around the corner from Camp Pendleton, California, drinking beer with the boys, and they told me those damn M16s are worthless. And they would jam and everything else. They had all kinds of problems with the M16. And I think I had one of those M16 carbines in Europe as my supposedly gun of choice that I didn't choose. Troops would have been much better with 12-gauge shotguns with both double-aught buck and dum-dums. That would have been a much better weapon, but I guess it's still the UN or something. It's outlawed to use a shotgun in war. That's so ridiculous. I mean, well, every day it seems some prominent figure is coming out in support of our struggle against the Kike Jews. On Friday, the Italian populist Andrea Zanino, spokesman for Forconi, or Pitchforks Movement, came out and decried his nation's enslavement to the Jew bankers in no uncertain terms. In an interview with La Repubblica newspaper, Zanino said, "We want the government to resign. We want the sovereignty of Italy, which today is slave to the bankers like the Rothschilds." It is curious that 5 or 6 of the richest people in the world are Jews, but this is something I need to investigate. Along with the usual suspects at the Anti-Defecation League and the entire Jew media, an Arab representative also came out and condemned the statements. Aha. According to Il Magistero newspaper, Fouad Adoui, president of the Community of Arab World in Italy organization, referred to Zanino's statements as delusional, dangerous, and manipulative regarding the religions and the Jewish religion. Well, do you think it's just a religion? I say it's a conspiracy. Flat-out conspiracy against all men and all races. This should not surprise us, as despite the Arabs' attempt to give the impression of anti-Semitism, they're very much on the side of the Jews in Europe. That's what Tommy told you before, benefiting as they do from the Jew-led invasion. This sounds like something I wrote. I suspect we're going to see more and more Muslims coming out to defend the Jews in their future. This puts into perspective the vital importance of what we do here on the internet with sites like Daily Stormer. Not only are we informing the masses, we are also providing an outlet for public figures to find objective information about what's happening in our world and use their influence to promote our anti-Semitic agenda. Yeah. Well, let's see here. Where am I at here? There I am. Well, remember that old canard about making Jews into soap? Well, it's still around with the Shoah business. Let's listen to what this guy's got to say. Another one came out of the woodwork. Hold on here. Let me switch this over and I'll send it to you.
And then what kind of soap do we have? We have soap made out of human beings. Made out of human. It says right there on the soap, there was 3 initials. R.J. F. Rein Yiddish fat. Pure Jewish fat. That's what the soap that we received. It was a green soap. And this is what we used. We also had some kind of a harsh detergent. I don't know, a very harsh detergent. But this is the kind of soap we use for ourselves.
Well, there you go, boys and girls. There's a man who's looks very healthy to me, and he doesn't look old enough to have been in the concentration camps. But he swears he used green soap made from Jews. I'm still waiting on the report to where all those tremendous amounts of ashes went that were from burning up Jews. There would have been millions of tons, or hundreds of thousands of tons of ash and crumbled little bits of bone. Where'd that all go? I want to know where it's at. Even if it was somehow buried underground with infrared, you could find it. See if I can get this bit up on air where this mulatto anchor lady on television broke down because she thought that people who had and Romney's families adopted a little baboon. And so somebody was on her show and made fun of it, and she is just totally broken up over it.
Harris Perry, we have a lot of news and politics to discuss this morning. But before we get to that, I am going to start with an apology. Last Sunday, we invited a panel of comedians for a year-in-review program. It's what we call our Look Back and Laughter. But in one of the segments, we looked at a number of photos that caught our attention over the course of the year. And in that segment, I asked my guests to provide kind of off-the-cuff ideas for captions of the photos that we were seeing. Among the images we aired was one of the Romney family that showed Governor Mitt Romney's grandchildren, including his adopted grandson, who is African-American. Now, given my own family history, I'd identified with that picture, and I intended to say positive and celebratory things about it. But whatever the intent was, the reality is that the segment proceeded in a way that was offensive, and showing the photo in that context of that segment was poor judgment. So without reservation or qualification, I apologize to the Romney family. Adults who enter into public life implicitly consent to having less privacy, but their families, and especially their children, should not be treated callously or thoughtlessly. Intention was not malicious, but I broke the ground rule that families are off limits, and for that I am sorry. Also, allow me to apologize to other families formed through transracial adoption, because I am deeply sorry that we suggested that interracial families are in any way funny or deserving of ridicule. On this program, we are dedicated to advocating for a wide diversity of families. It is one of our core principles, and I am reminded that when we are doing so, it must always be with the utmost respect. I'm genuinely appreciative of everyone who offered serious criticisms of last Sunday's program, and I am reminded that our fiercest critics can sometimes be our best teachers.
Boy, oh boy, she's scrambling for her job. She's crying in her beard, everything else, this mulatto babe. And actually, she didn't say it. I guess a comedian said it. But you see, that's what happens when there's an agenda of the Jew thinkers and Jews and all those kind of people, that you got to have a pet little orangutan in your house or you're not one of the boys. Don't ever make a joke about it, or you're going to lose your job, man. Niglets are in, boys and girls. Niglets are in, especially when big-shot politicians and movie stars use them as beards. Well, so much for the warmonger George Bush Jr., his father, and Cheney, and all the bastards up there that need to be hung properly in the city square. Oh, man. Just over 2 years since American troops entirely withdrew from Iraq, the black flag of Al-Qaeda flies over the city of Fallujah's government buildings in Iraq's western Anbar province. It was there that several American contractors were killed and strung up over a bridge in 2004, and American Marines fought the biggest battle of the Iraq War. Quote, the capture of Fallujah came amid an explosion of violence across the western desert province of Anbar, in which local tribes, the Iraqi security forces, and Al-Qaeda militants have been fighting one another for days in a confusing, chaotic three-way war. And you can chalk it all up not only to religious nonsense, different factions of Islam against each other, but the fact that we went in, the warmongering Bush criminal family went in there supposedly to punish the people that knocked down the World Trade Center, and that's the craziest thing that I'd ever heard, when we all know that Saudi Arabia and Israel were up to their ears in the thing, and nobody's been tried for it yet. No American politician. The report notes that American service personnel fought for years to assert power over the city at the heart of the Sunni Triangle over the course of the occupation of Iraq. What a scam. Of course, we were occupying. We were killing people in another country. We were the war criminals, the people who run this country. Whether it's Al-Qaeda or whoever it is, it's their country. Let them run it. The Post further observes that the explosion of violence in the province, which borders Syria, coincides with that state's escalating civil war. Yeah, it just keeps going. Yeah. Saddam Hussein was a Gandhi compared to what's going on now. The upheaval also affirmed the soaring capabilities of the Islamic State of Iraq and Syria. You see, Saddam Hussein kept these people at bay. so the religious crazies couldn't get totally out of line. The rebranded version of the Al-Qaeda in Iraq organization that formed a decade ago to confront U.S. troops and expand into Syria last year while also escalating its activities in Iraq. Because these radical Islamics, they want the whole area, but they're split down the middle. Quote, at the moment there's no presence of the Iraqi states in Fallujah, a local journalist told Post reporter Liz Sly, in the province's capital of Ramadi. However, local tribesmen who fought alongside U.S. troops have reportedly been successful at ousting Al-Qaeda rebels from the city. Oh boy. Didn't we lose 5,000 Americans or U.S. citizens over there in Iraq? I think it was around 5,000. And I think we've lost about that many in Afghanistan, too. Well, isn't that peachy? But they'll put our friends and people in jail forever over almost nothing compared to what these bastard war criminals commit. Oh, boy. One of these days, pow, right in the kisser, as Jackie Gleason used to say.
Well, no.
Fox, a member of Mothers Against Drunk Driving, arrested for doing the unthinkable.
Police say they caught her swerving all over the road. Her breath alcohol, 3 times the legal limit. Action News' Ashley Coleman is live in the action cam on the south side tonight. And Ashley, we're talking about a woman who fought to keep our roads safe.
Mark, this woman worked to make sure that drunk drivers didn't go out on these roads and put people in danger. But police say she did just that. They say that she was swerving all over the road, crossing over into the median and onto the side of the road before they arrested her and put her in jail.
James Anderson Jr. was a father, a husband, and a dedicated sheriff's deputy when he was killed by a drunk driver. It's tragedies like this Deborah Oberlin worked hard to prevent through her involvement with Mothers Against Drunk Driving. So a lot of people were surprised when Oberlin was arrested on a DUI charge. Gainesville police say Oberlin was driving with a breath alcohol of 0.239. That's nearly 3 times the legal limit. She was arrested near this woman's home.
She obviously did a very bad thing.
According to this arrest report obtained by Action News, Oberlin was swerving all over this busy Gainesville road, and her eyes were bloodshot. This is a woman who was part of a public campaign against drunk driving.
Deborah, hi. My name's Ashley Coleman. I'm calling from Action News in Jacksonville. I'm calling to see if you'd like to comment on your DUI arrest.
Oberlin didn't want to talk about her arrest when I called her, but Mad did. In a statement, Mad wrote, they are, quote, concerned to hear about the recent alleged drunk driving arrest of Deborah Oberlin, adding they commend law enforcement for their efforts to keep our roads safe. Keeping the roads safe so other families don't have to deal with preventable tragedies like what happened to Deputy James Anderson.
Well, some of the Oberlin's neighbors told me she's a really nice woman. She's been having some personal problems recently, and they think that she just made one really bad mistake with this DUI. Reporting live on the South Side tonight, Ashley Coleman, Fox 30, Action News.
All right, Ashley, 27-year-old Chris.
You know, this kind of crap happens all the time. There's been mad mothers being arrested for drunk driving 15 years ago. I remember that. This country is run on hypocrisy, a nation of hypocrites, liars, cheats. I mean, you know, that's what it is out there. But if you're in a power position, usually you can escape it, or at least have the money to get good attorneys to get you out of it. Yeah, you watch and see how many big, very expensive Lexus and Lincolns and all that Jaguars with government plates on, how many times they're stopped to get a ticket? Yeah, right. I used to know cops who got so drunk. I knew one detective in Fallbrook, California. He used to get so drunk that he couldn't even get his keys in the door, and the cruiser would come along, and he'd show him his detective badge, and They say, go right on, go right on. He go right on driving down the road. Actually, the working class have a good reason to drink. And they usually are the ones who get really collared by these cops. They love to get people who don't have hardly any money and hold them in jail and make them do all kinds of things. So anyhow, most of the rich never pay. Well, it says we don't know who thought it would be a great idea to put the preachers of L.A. on TV, but now the country's preachers are in the national spotlight. Well, you never want to put preachers in the spotlight because you're going to find a lot of shit. Unfortunately, they don't all stand up to scrutiny. We're always surprised at how many men of God turn out to be suspect, low-down, and downright devious. Here are picks for 15 of the most suspect preachers around. Okay. I see his ugly face. Dietrich Haddon, preacher from L.A. For a preacher, Dietrich has had a lot of trouble keeping it in his pants. He opened up about getting his fiancée, Dominique, pregnant before his divorce was finalized on Preachers of L.A. But he's kept quiet about Simone Lewis, the woman who came forward with emails and nude pictures to prove they were dating while he was still married. And has anyone noticed how defensive he gets anytime someone calls him out on this stuff? Well, here's another niggeroo preacher out there in L.A. Now, these are all niggers, you know. Wait a minute, what have I got here? Anyway, our second black subject from Preachers of L.A. First, Omarosa was the main villain on The Apprentice, and that image is hard to shake. When her fiancé died, people accused her of everything from killing him to changing his will to selling his funeral to the paparazzi. Now that she's a minister of God, people still think her motives are suspect. The world just isn't ready for Reverend Menegault. That's preacher number two. Now here's our third featured nigger preacher, Creflo Dollar. Interesting last name. A lot of people believed in Creflo Dollar, at least enough to give him enough ties to afford a Rolls Royce, a private jet, a $1 million home, and a $2.5 million apartment in New York City. They were all shocked when they found out that Creflo strangled his 15-year-old daughter and beat her with a shoe for staying out late. And that's preacher, nigger preacher from L.A. number three. Now let's go to Nick. Wait a minute. I keep getting these pop-ups. But preacher number four. I guess that's preacher, nigger preacher number four in L.A. Pastor Long. That's Eddie Long, was famous for his sermons on sin of homosexuality. So we were all surprised when in 2010, four boys came forward to accuse him of molesting them. The New Birth Missionary Baptist Church denied the 2010 allegations, but he settled out of court with five complainants anyway. Well, that's old Eddie Long. He's the missionary for the Jesus, for the baby Jesus. Well, surprise, surprise, number five is Pat Robertson. The 700 Club host has a closet full of skeletons. He's made controversial statements against homosexuality, women's rights, and minorities. But there are signs he's more than just a controversial figure. The multimillionaire senator's son has been caught with financial ties to dirty politicians and nigger despots in Africa. Huh, a little bit of hypocrisy there, too. Good old Pat. And he's the one who wants to bomb Iran and kill all those people and all those kids and babies and everything in Iran because Jesus told him to do it, or at least advocate it. He wouldn't have the guts to do anything. Well, the next nigger preacher from L.A. is M.A.S.E., Maz. Maz isn't the first rapper turned minister. But he may be the first rapper turned minister, turned rapper, turned minister, turned rapper. Now Mays is rapping and preaching at the same time. But he's flip-flopped so many times, we bet a lot of people have been having trouble taking his ministry seriously. Yeah. Well, here's another nigger preacher. Yeah, one more time. How about this? Terry Hornbuckle. When Pastor Hornbuckle started out in 1986, he certainly seemed like a man of God. He raised his congregation from just 15 members to thousands in 6 years. But it all came crashing down when he was accused and convicted of drugging and raping 3 women. He won't be released from prison until 2020. Praise the Lord. There's another nigger preacher, Henry Deacon Lyons. Back in 1994, Deacon Lyons was the highly respected president of the National Baptist Convention. So when he was arrested for embezzlement, his supporters believed him when he said it was just the white man out to bring him down. Unfortunately, the accusations turned out to be true. Henry had stolen more than $4 million from the organization's 10 million members during the few years that he was president. Jesus told him to do it. Here's another nigger reverend, Gaston Smith. Reverend Gaston Smith was known for 3 things, his expensive gaiters, his fashionable clothing, and his work helping Miami's poor. Unfortunately, the Florida preacher was financing the first 2 through the 3rd. Instead of helping low-income families with money he raised, he spent it on himself. And when he was convicted in 2009, the congregation was forced to take on the debt and pay back the money themselves. Oh, so be it for the downtrodden. Gaston Smith appreciates it. These were all black preachers. It was on the show, preachers from L.A., but they seem to be from around the country. But they're all black as the ace of spades. Well, maybe a little brown. Next is Thomas Wesley Weeks, Jr. The world watched when popular televangelist Bishop Weeks married Pastor Juanita Bynum in a million-dollar ceremony in 2002. And they were just as shocked when Weeks was caught beating, stomping, and choking Juanita in the parking lot of a hotel just 5 years later. But the scandal wasn't over yet. 2 years after the incident, Juanita announced that she was a lesbian who had had many affairs with women while she was a pastor. Boy, oh boy, these nigger boys and nigger girls get around nowadays. It's hard to keep them down on the plantation. And my favorite white boy, Jerry Lee Lewis's cousin, Jimmy Swaggart. He's a white boy, right, you know. Pastor Swaggart was one of the biggest names in televangelism. His empire had 10,000 employees and brought in over $12 billion a year. Then in 1988, he was caught with a prostitute in a motel. That was out in Needles, California. I remember it well. And when he tearfully repented on television, his fans forgave him, like they always do. That is, until 2 years later, when he was caught sleeping with another prostitute. Sex scandals, lawsuits, and a lien by the IRS eventually brought his empire crashing down around him. I don't think so. I see him on TV all the time. He's a steady guy here in the Midwest on television. He's making money hand over fist. See, these nigger boys, they learned all this stuff from the white boys. You gotta admit that. They learned all this Jesus business from the white boys. Another white boy, Ted Haggard, was the leader of Colorado's largest mega church. Then in 2006, a male prostitute outed him, saying they spent several sex and drug-fueled nights together. Haggard admitted getting a message from the man and buying meth from him. But then he said he threw the meth away and kept it in his pants. Unfortunately, no one believed him, and he was fired from the church for sexual immoral conduct. Yeah, right, okay. Well, that's all about all the fun and for I can't even say the word. All the fun I can have today. If I put any more of these con men on here and you sucker Christians out there that follow this stuff, I don't know, man. It's mental illness. I'll be back with you on Moon's Day. I'm going to take a little break tomorrow and go out and eat snow. 14-5. Or as Wolf Wall Street said on a message on the phone line, he says, 14-14. 14, and then 14 for tribute to the womanhood. Righto. Remember, they got to have a warrant to get in. Don't let them put their foot in your door. Yeah. And I have nothing to say. Please, please, if there's nothing else that you'll ever remember that I've said to you over and over, it's I have nothing to say whenever any agent of the government comes around to try to interrogate you. They're not trying to find you innocent, baby.
Got me worried now. It makes me feel somehow as if the world is gonna break. I come up short on breath. It's like I'm scared to death that I might make a bold mistake. I'd grown accustomed to the comfort. Nothing heavy on my plate. I come to see myself as free at last. But now I just don't feel that great. I can't love you like I want to.
Every chance to see the real you ought to feel.